All right, hello everyone. So my name's Leah D'Amata, and this is Dana Ashby, and we're recent graduates from McMaster University and physiotherapists. And so today we are going to be presenting on a scoping review, and it is on the assessment, risk factors, impact, and management of fatigue with individuals with cerebral palsy across the lifespan. So just for an introduction, as I mentioned, this was in our second year of our research study, and we did it along with the collaboration of CanChild and director of CanChild, which is Dr. Gorder. He was our supervisor. And so this is just a brief outline. So we're going to be talking about our scoping review, looking at methods, our discussion, and our findings. We also have a so what. So what does that mean for us as clinical practitioners? So we created a care pathway. And then we'll talk about implications for future research and then open the floor to the audience.
So we want to start by giving you a definition of cerebral palsy. So some of you may know what it is, but some of you may not. So cerebral palsy refers to a group of disorders in the development of motor control and posture, occurring as a result of a non-progressive impairment of the development of the central nervous system. And we define fatigue as a reduced capacity to sustain power output over time, and is the experience of feeling tired, weak, or lacking energy. So to give you a background into our topic, cerebral palsy is one of the most common pediatric physical disabilities, with a prevalence rate of 1.5 to 3 per 1,000 live births. Fatigue is one of the most common impairments experienced, and 30 to 41% of adults with CP are severely fatigued. Fatigue is a multifactorial phenomenon, so there's many personal and CP-related characteristics that impact this. And fatigue is more debilitating with age. There's also a vicious deconditioning cycle where when you're fatigued, you have lower physical activity levels, and then as a result, you have lower pulmonary fitness, which makes you more fatigued, etc. And understanding this cycle helps direct lifestyle interventions such as weight management and exercise at an early age to set children up for the future. So here comes our research. So the gap in the literature right now is the cause of fatigue, associated risk factors, and prognosis. There's also a lack of appropriate and valid measurement tools that can assess severity of fatigue across both GMFCS levels and the lifespan. So GMFCS levels are gross motor function classification systems, and they go from level 1 to 5, where 1 is the lowest level of impairment and 5 is the highest level of impairment. Oh, sorry guys, jumped. Okay. Our research. So to our knowledge, while there is literature on fatigue and cerebral palsy, there are currently no reviews specifically encompassing all of the research to be used in a clinically meaningful way. So the aims of our research were to describe the assessment tools, risk factors, impact, and management techniques that address fatigue and cerebral palsy across the lifespan and all GMFCS levels. Additionally, we would like to outline a resource for healthcare practitioners like yourselves to apply current literature into clinical practice. So our methods. So we systematically searched 5 databases. We had inclusion criteria, and the data was organized with the following subheadings: risk factors, assessment, management, and impact. And this goes through our 5 databases at the top, and then how we went from 135 articles down to 38. And our results, there were 38 articles identified, and there was agreement between the two pairs of reviewers, which was calculated using the Cohen's Kappa statistic.
All right, so from the 4 different categories we have and the 38 articles we used, the assessment, 31 articles were addressed, 15 articles addressed the impact, 8 addressed risk factors, and then 23 addressed the management techniques. And so now what we'll go through is each component of our findings and what were the main indicators for us as clinical practitioners in physiotherapy. All right, so first part was assessment, and so that was used again in 31 articles. From that, there was physical assessment findings, outcome measures, as well as subjective assessments and questioning. So the most utilized and valid outcome measures that were used was the fatigue severity scale, and that one was in 7 different articles. The pediatric quality of life multidimensional fatigue scale was used in 8 different articles, and then more recently, there was the fatigue impact self-severity assessment scale, and that one is actually the first outcome measure that's used for the population of cerebral palsy, so that's a more new and upcoming one to be used. In regards to risk factors, 8 articles address that, and so we kind of created a kind of this just a table with the most common ones. And the first ones were the ones that were highlighted the most in the studies. So low physical activity levels, pain, increased BMI and waist circumference, and then again, across the classification system of the GMF CS levels. In regards to impact, that was addressed in 15 different articles. And as we mentioned earlier, it's one of the four greatest impairments in cerebral palsy. We also mentioned, again, across the GMF CS levels, there is a linear increase from 1 up until 3 with an increased number amount of fatigue. After that, there's actually a decreased amount for level 4 and 5, and that's attributed to the power wheelchairs and the amount of equipment that they have for the energy conservation. And of that, 18% of the GMF CS levels reported fatigue, and then 30% reported severe fatigue. Additionally, reduced aerobic capacity, increased energy expenditure, decreased VO2 max, and overall higher physical strain was attributed to fatigue. In regards to ambulation, there is a variety of articles that address that. They mentioned that there's a slower preferred walking speed. Often they stopped ambulating due to fatigue, and after the age of 37, there's actually a decline in the amount of ambulation due to the amount of fatigue. And that also attributed to lower scores of life satisfaction. Furthermore, in regards to physical activity, especially with the younger population in pediatrics, they found that they'd push themselves too hard past that threshold, and then they would have that fatigue and muscle soreness afterwards. Some other factors that were addressed in regards to fatigue was waist circumference, BMI, the gross motor function, and also the subtype of cerebral palsy. They mentioned that for every 10% of increased body mass, significantly increased the amount of energy required for ambulating. And furthermore, they also talked about poor social integration. So due to the fatigue, they have increased missed days of school and also just decreased school functioning as well. So the last topic of our research study is the management, and what do we do with fatigue in cerebral palsy, and how do we address that? The majority of the articles, so of the 23, 11 of them address exercise, which is great as physiotherapists because it's something that we can directly target. And so from that, they focused on muscle strength, cardiorespiratory fitness, knee extensor strength for gait efficiency, and aquatic therapy programs. And in addition, they also talked about barriers and facilitators to be kind of considered as we go through creating exercise programs. Three of them addressed weight management. Pain management was also addressed in one. There was two that talked about adaptive equipments and considering that for accessibility and also for energy expenditure and making sure we have that conservation management program. Spasticity management was also included, talking about what is the best type of spasticity medication to be used, as that can be a huge indicator for fatigue. Counseling and motivational interviewing was also addressed. And the last one we kind of compiled into one area, which was resources, education, and complementary therapies. So that's really providing the resources in the community, talking about ways to increase social participation, having more of that transportation accessible spaces, and again, addressing the energy conservation and stress management techniques. So for us, we kind of were questioning, so what does that mean for us? And what can we do as healthcare practitioners? And so we followed a website, so the AACPDM, which is the American Academy for Cerebral Palsy and Developmental Medicine. And they have a variety of care pathways. And so we've created one to hopefully be kind of published in through there in the next coming months or a year. And we'll walk that through as to kind of, if we have someone with cerebral palsy across a lifespan, what can we do from assessment all the way down to management? So I'll walk you through that now. So first, for assessment, we divide it into four different categories. So the first one, again, we talked about already, the risk factors. And so that's looking, again, from physical activity ranging all the way down to their psychological well-being. The second part is looking at subjective assessments. And that was through the outcome measures and also just some subjective questioning that was mentioned in the studies. So for example, how is it interfering with your daily activities? How are you keeping up with your peers? What kind of equipment are you using to get around the environment? We also talked about outcome measures that are available to be utilized, and I've mentioned those already, such as the FISA, the Fatigue Impact and Severity Self-Assessment Scale. And then the last component is our physical assessment. So looking at performance-based outcome measures, such as your 6-minute walk test, your 1-minute walk test, et cetera, looking at body composition, your Tardo scale, and other components of an observation. So from that, so we can bring it down to the next part, we try to categorize levels of fatigue and the severity. And for outcome measures, there's really only the fatigue severity scale, and that was done for ages 25 to 45. So outside that scope, there's not much literature to support dividing up the categorization of fatigue right now. So for the ages of 25 to 45, we have mild, moderate, and severe. And for each, we kind of have what we should be focusing on. So for mild, looking at more of prevention, kind of ongoing assessment of risk factors. For moderate, it's more about addressing any medical management that's needed and providing adaptive equipment as necessary. And then severe is looking at the medical management as well as considering all other medical conditions and reducing the amount of activity per day if needed. So this is the management technique, or management component that we've already briefly talked about, and it's listed there. And on this side, we have your referral opportunities. So we made this not necessarily just for physiotherapists, which is why it's on there, but for us right now, it's great because we can address a variety of these different factors. And then some considerations that we had is looking at transition to adulthood, for example. So as they get into that age where they're finishing school and employment, there's a lot more increase requirements and needs, and that can really take an impact on fatigue, so considering that as well. And as well as patients under the age of 25, what are some strategies that we can implement to more of a preventative factor later down the road?
Okay, so implications of our research. So the aim of the study is to apply current literature into current practice to promote optimal rehab to address fatigue for individuals with CP and beyond CP. Lots of other conditions can relate to this as well. So as physiotherapists, you know that we're part of interdisciplinary teams. So we have that opportunity to guide clinical decision making. As a result, it is really crucial that we understand impact, risk factors, assessment tools, and management techniques available for individuals with fatigue. And this research is an appropriate starting point in recognizing and treating individuals with CP-related fatigue across the lifespan. So future directions, as we conducted a scoping review, it would be great to do a systematic review as there's more literature available. It's also really important to meet with the stakeholders to further discuss the clinically relevant approach to care. And then eventually we're hoping to do a publication of our care pathway to encourage all healthcare professionals to promote optimal rehab interventions. So lastly, we just want to thank our supervisor, Dr. Gorder from Can Child, who was an inspiration for this project, as well as Everett Claridge, as he did a great critical review of our manuscript. And lastly, our stakeholders, we involved the spasticity team from McMaster Children's Hospital, current physiatry residents at McMaster, and physiotherapists from Holland.
Thanks very much. Are there any questions?
All right, so thank you for the presentation. I found it was really interesting to assess the fatigue aspect of CP, which I congratulate you on that. It was really interesting. But how did you take under consideration the different types of CP and how the different types can be managed?
Hello? Oh, yeah, it works. Really good question. So they mentioned in regards to the different types, a lot of studies looked at spastic diplegia, so there's not a lot of evidence, specifically for fatigue. There's just very limited evidence, so it's kind of hard to differentiate across it. So as of right now, we found as they had more levels of fatigue, more levels of spasticity and more limbs affected, there's higher levels of fatigue, but it's really hard to answer that question just because there's such limited evidence right now addressing the fatigue component.
One more question?
That was great. I really enjoyed that. My question is about the outcome measures. And have those physical activity and exercise outcome measures been validated with CP populations, like 6-minute walk test and so on?
So the one that most recently was the FISA, and that was with Dr. Gorder, another recent study, I think it was in 2017, and that one is for cerebral palsy. In regards to 6-minute walk test and 1-minute walk test, we didn't find that at all with fatigue in our population. So that was the only one that catered to cerebral palsy.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody who presented today, and I'd like to thank the audience for your attention and questions. I want to remind you to thank you very much. Complete your session evaluation that you'll find on your Event Mobi app, and you have a chance to win a big prize. I don't know what it is, but there's a big prize. And now you can head off to lunch, and we'll see you again.